Thank you very much for coming. You have been here before, right?
Many times.
So tell me your name, please.
Richard Sepulveda.
Okay. And as you know, right, we're doing the series on artist cognition.
Yeah.
So you can talk about whatever kind of art form you want and whatever you think art does and how it functions in the world.
Well, I remember last time I was here, we got interrupted by that flood that happened randomly. We were discussing how art.
Oh yeah, the Gowanus Canal flooded.
Yeah.
Right.
It was so out of the blue, wasn't it?
Right, it was out of the blue. Right. We were all of a sudden in water. Right. Yeah. I remember. Yeah.
I think we had gone around towards. We actually started talking about the sculptures. And how that the sculptures that are being, you know, controversial right now that are being turned down.
Oh, the statues, yeah, all the monuments.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and how it relates to, because we had began talking about how art makes people do this kind of introspective work. It becomes a thing of like, why wasn't I able to do that? And what does that say about me in relation to the artist?
Do you mean, why couldn't I do that, like, craft-wise?
Yeah,
is that what you mean?
In trying to understand what the artist was saying, it makes us think about our own limits and what are they.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Right. So just this, just a couple of days ago, I got some photographs from somebody about in Richmond, Virginia, right? All the statues and monuments that had been taken down there. I guess it was just like a whole lane, from what I understand, always before that was like Civil War Confederate statues, right?
Yeah.
So now they're down. So is that what you were thinking of?
Yeah, because I was just, thinking about how the emotion that these pieces of art invoke in people, that the fact that it provokes that action, you know, and what is art like that, or art in general, really, doing to the individual to provoke
those
ideas and those feelings,
and how
it resonates to a collective.
Okay, great, great topic, right? So let's just be super specific, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know, Richmond is like a totally fine place, but you can pick another one,
no, that's
right?
Fine. Yeah.
So how did that happen? How did that happen that those statues came to have that meaning?
Yeah, like we know that, you know, the intention of some of the artists at a kind of a basic level, right?
Yeah.
If they wanted to show reverence to a certain individual. But how is it that it comes to take on such a profound meaning, right? To the people that want to take it down and the people that want to keep it up.
Yeah.
Right? How does it drill so deeply into both of their consciousnesses that, I mean, violence actually happens as a result of this, right? And for all intents and purposes, it is an inanimate object, right?
Right.
But
it stands for other things.
Other things.
Right? So talk a little bit about that. You know, about what is it that it's standing for? I mean, right, it's an inanimate object. This is a really good way that you're setting it up here. Right? So it's an inanimate object, and yet it stands for a whole construct, a whole mental construct, a whole value system, a whole go on.
Right.
What is it doing?
Yeah, I mean, it's standing for those things, but the real issue about that is that it's standing for what exactly? Because it seems subjective, right? Because
you mean because a person experiences it,
right?
You mean it's subjective in that way,
right? Exactly.
But,
like
okay,
even if you ask two people that have the same sort of ideological perception of the art, right?
Yeah.
If you ask them what it stands for, you're going to get probably different answers. You'll get answers that kind of touch on each other.
Uh-huh.
But the emotion of those answers is going to resonate entirely differently.
Okay, so you think, right, let's play this out slowly, right? Mm-hmm. Just this name people, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you've got Joe and you've got Harry. Now that's a bad name. Joe and, I don't know, give me a name.
Sally.
Sally. That's a bad name too, right? I'm just kidding. We're not coming up with good names, right?
Uh-huh.
But, all right, so these two people agree, right? So let's just say, right, that both of these people agree that the statues are, let's say, good.
Right.
Right? So let's say these are sort of pro-Confederate Southerners, you know, who have this narrative of it's states' rights and all that stuff. Right. So they're going to each look at these and they're going to vote yes. So in that way, they agree. Yes, let's keep them. Right. But the differences are going to be maybe in the very specific things. Like one will say, oh, this was like a very important person to our state. Right. Mm-hmm. And the other person go, no, this is a very important symbol for states' rights and, you know, what we fought for. Right. So they'll be slightly different. Right. But they're right. going to agree in terms of the sort of binary yes, no. Is that what you're thinking?
Right.
OK. So now, and then you were thinking that that makes it subjective.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
OK. But let me argue with you for a moment here, right? Is it entirely subjective? Because they've, like everyone does, like you're saying, right? They've bought into a kind of scenario and narrative that everybody shares. So it's a very constructed, consensus-built, abstract, theoretical point of view that they've bought into, right? Mm-hmm. But it's something that is not just their experience. What they've bought into is a social phenomenon that's outside of them that they then incorporate into themselves and re-experience. That wasn't very clear. It's not subjective in the way that I touch this and it's cold. It's not subjective like that, right?
Yeah.
It's there is a sort of, quote, objective or at least intersubjective, right, component to it.
I like that term, intersubjective.
Right,
yeah.
Right. So this thing of being pro-Confederate, right, isn't subjective in that way. It's intersubjective in that it's a social construct that people either stand in relation to that they feel positively about, or they stand in relation to that they feel negatively about.
Right.
But they are standing in relation to something that is external to them, right? Whether they bring it into themselves and experience it themselves, it is still something that's sort of external.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So how does this happen? Go back to the original point that you're making, right? How does it happen that these statues come to stand for these abstract social constructs that are really mental things, right? They're mental things, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, I guess, you know, theoretically, someone, if you had someone who kind of didn't, like, take someone from a, you know, a foreign country who doesn't really know that much about the Civil War, right? And you just expose them to the statue.
Good example.
And you don't really tell them who the person is. They don't have Google or anything like that. They're kind of, their reaction to it is not going to be in any way have any sort of real attachment to the thing that they're seeing. They might see a person on a horse, like, oh, there's a guy on a horse, you know, he looks very kind of prestigious or whatever. But what does that mean to
that
person?
They won't get what it means.
Right.
You know, the person that was here a couple of conversations ago was saying the exact same thing about architecture. That architecture is only useful for its function because it connects people to sort of human social interactions and human social stories.
Yeah.
And you're kind of saying the same thing, right? So statues then become only meaningful because we attach them to a whole sequence of events and a whole history and a whole narrative that means something to us or doesn't mean something to us, right?
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, art in general. I mean, I guess you could say that the artist, whoever the creator is, it's going to mean something to them because they created it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But art being a shared experience, once it's obviously presented to any other person other than its creator, is going to take on this kind of, you know, well, what does it mean to me? And what, you know, once that happens to the observer, right, then it becomes like this whole, it's almost like this weird perpetual motion thing happens where things start to get attached to the experience.
Perpetual motion, that's a great phrase. Yeah.
Once the initial observation happens, then all this work happens as a consequence of that. And then if enough people see it, enough people engage with it, maybe it becomes a social thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then it's something other than the inanimate object.
Right.
Right.
Then so it takes on something else.
It's what? What is that then? What would you call that?
Oh, that's
because you said at the very, very beginning, you said it's a sign for something.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But now, and I think you're probably right, now you're identifying it as having some particular traits in and of itself, not just a empty sign for something else, but it almost has this organic entity.
Yeah,
it's developed, right?
Yeah, I think it does. It does have that, but it all depends on the position of the observer in relation to it. So it's like I said, if it's a foreigner who doesn't know anything about it, mm-hmm. then it's almost negates the whole impact,
experience, yeah.
right? And the experience is not going to be nearly anything close to what the person that may have grown up in the area or know the artist or whatever the relationship is, that it's not,
yeah.
you know.
Okay, so, you know, we have our own story here in New York City, right? I'm sure mm-hmm. you've read about this at the Museum of Natural History.
Yes.
You know, they're taking down that yes. statue there, yeah. right? Okay, so, and some people have said, oh, you shouldn't take down these things. You should add another layer of description to it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. What do you think?
I'm very much against taking down any type of statues.
Okay, tell me why.
I don't see the, put it this way, I always liken it back to when ISIS was expanding in the Middle East and they took it upon themselves to destroy pre-Islamic, idols.
Yeah.
I don't see the philosophical difference.
Oh, interesting point. Okay.
Yeah, I don't believe that you are, that a person has the right to impinge on the freedom of expression of the artist, no matter how out of date the person may be. I think that you take it for what it is, right? And you know, in the case of Confederate statues, I have a little asterisk next to that one, because I think the primary argument for removing them, at least in my understanding, is that you don't want to be financially responsible via taxation for their upkeep.
Okay.
So it's
a public.
Right. So I can understand that.
Right.
Right. But in the case,
Biden said they should be in museums, and I guess it's the same point, right?
Yeah. That's my point. This is like, I don't want to impose it on people who don't agree with it by taking money from them for its upkeep, especially if they don't want it. Yeah. So you put it in a museum or sell it to a private collector, whatever. Either way, it still exists.
Right. So what? All right. There's a couple of different things here.
Yeah.
One, you seem to be against, right? The essentially sort of the censorship and the destruction of objects,
mm-hmm.
right? On the basis of the associated symbolic value. Mm-hmm. So in the same way that ISIS was wrong to destroy the Buddhist
exactly.
sculptures,
yeah.
you would say it's wrong to destroy any kind, to destroy,
yeah.
right? To destroy anything as a way of eradicating what it stands for.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. So that's number one. Number two, though, right, you have a separate point about that these statues exist in the public, and so it's requiring public taxation in order to upkeep them, which is then tacitly requiring the public to support what it is that they stand for.
Exactly.
Okay. That's so complicated,
right?
It
is very
complicated. That's very complicated because, all right, God, why am I being so argumentative here? I'm sorry. I don't know why. All right, so
no, it's great.
We give all sorts of houses of worship taxation breaks,
mm-hmm.
right? So we as taxpayers essentially kind of pay for houses of worship and nonprofits. It's the same,
yeah.
right? It's the same, right? We sort of pay for them to exist, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not quite the same thing, right? Now, let's go back to the Confederate statues.
Mm-hmm.
So, as an analogy, though, right, I remember, right, because I wrote a book about it, that there was a huge debate, like in the 1970s, right, with NEA funding, because a lot of people, conservative people
right.
in Congress said, I don't want to pay for that. That's my tax dollars. I don't want to pay for that kind of art. That's crap. Right. So do you have a policy set up where taxation dollars for art only goes to the art that offends no one?
I know,
right?
That's rough,
what
eh?
Would that be?
Well, you know, and you know what? I would have to say I liken it to how we have the FCC, you know?
Yeah.
Because television programs, for all intents and purposes, are works of art. Same thing with, you know, made-for-TV movies, right?
Yeah.
But they can't get away with saying or doing as they please. They're subject to this body to regulate them.
Right? Yeah, time and place, exactly. I think they're called.
Yeah. So in that respect, if the binary choice is between this thing can exist or this thing can only exist in such a form as to not offend anyone, then I think that we defer to
public sculptures seem to be a separate thing because they seem to represent the larger social fabric's point of view.
Yeah.
Right? And so it doesn't quite seem analogous to NEA funding because NEA funding would pay for all kinds of things that exist in sort of semi-public, kind of more private settings, right?
Yeah.
But a public sculpture, right, seems to be the kind of thing that demands maybe not univocal support, but pretty close to univocal support, right?
Yeah.
We all believe in this, the Statue of Liberty or whatever it is, right?
Exactly.
We all believe in this, right? This is all something that we can get behind. And I take it, right, that the what seemed to me pretty legitimate objections to the pro-Confederate statues are, wait a minute, we're actually not all behind fighting for slavery. We actually thought that was a bad idea. maybe we need to kind of reformulate what it is that we're all going to support here.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Maybe that's the distinction, right? That these public things in this setting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Because there's something about knowing that we live in a democratic society where, you know, for all intents and purposes, it's the general will of the society that is supposed to approve of certain things, especially in terms of the public. And, you know, yet we have these statues, these monuments, whatever, however. And that's interesting, too, that distinction between statue and monument. Some people would call something a monument. Some people would call something a statue.
Oh, that's a very interesting point.
Right.
You're right. It takes on a very different meaning when you call monument. Because it's a monument to something.
To something, exactly.
Right? Very good. Yeah. Very good. Very good point.
Yeah.
I had never thought of that.
And in any event, they're both in the public sphere.
Yeah.
They're both on public display. And they're both taking on public funds for their maintenance, obviously.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
So then all of a sudden it becomes a democratic thing where, well, if the general will of the people is such that they don't want it anymore.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it would be wrong to retroactively remove the freedom of expression of the artists or the people that erected it, right? But therefore, I think the only solution would be to remove it from public
public domain, right? Yeah. You know, Germany went through a very difficult period of time, right, after World War II, where they had to get out of the public domain all positive references to Hitler, right?
Yeah.
So swastika, you know, pictures of Hitler, all of these things, right? So it's interesting, I think, to watch a society go through the process of going, oh no, that we don't stand for anymore. We're going to change that, right? And America never did do that after the Civil War. The South never said, oh my God, we sinned.
Yeah. I don't know how they've ever really reintegrated in terms of because there's always the South will rise again. This very kind of, at some point in the far distant future, their rebellion will take hold again. If you sat down with some of them and would explain, you know, that's a very treasonous thing to say.
Yeah.
You know, that you still hold, you haven't really accepted the Union for what it is yet. They would see, it's a weird cognitive dissonance.
It is. Yeah. Somebody else has pointed that out to me recently, you know, the treasonous aspect. And I have to admit, I hadn't really seen that before. I know that's kind of dumb, but I hadn't really seen it. But now I see it a lot, right? But the part that I didn't ever go to the South, never, until 2 years ago. I always avoided the South, to tell you the truth, right? And I went, and I was astounded at all the Confederate flags. I was astounded at the kind of pride and history of plantations. and there was no similarity to what I had experienced in Germany, where there was real shame that there had been a regime that was genocidal, right? There was none of that that I picked up on the South.
Well, you know the amazing thing about that? I think maybe it would have been different had at the time we had the... Because remember, you know, after the Holocaust, there was actual footage of what was done.
Oh my God, that's an interesting point.
You know, so we only have fictional narratives of what was... A fictional, you know, representations of what was done.
Yeah,
in terms of slavery in the South, right?
Yeah, stories.
And we have some anecdotal, you know, written accounts, but we never had actual.
I wonder if you're right about that. You know that because they do say that it was the photographs and the movies and the documentation of the horrors of it, right?
Yeah.
And that's a very interesting thought. I wonder how true that is, right? That people could ignore the rape and the murder and the deaths, right?
Mm-hmm.
Have you, no, you haven't, I don't think, been to the Lynching Museum down in Alabama?
No, I haven't.
Should go. Wow. Amazing. Totally amazing experience, right?
Mm.
Because what that was is really evident. There was also an exhibit that I saw 20 years ago at a tiny little gallery on the Upper East Side called the Roth Horowitz Gallery, right? And it was an exhibit of postcards that people sent to one another of lynchings.
Wow.
Postcards.
Wow.
People would have picnics under a lynched body. And it wasn't a couple people. It was 100 people, right? And there was a tradition of sending postcards, this collection of sending postcards about lynchings, right?
Wow.
I just recently read a book called The Lynching Tree, which is a long description of that too, right? So I think that somehow the whole murderous component of this, I mean, this, you know, and the rape, you know, this is like institutionalized rape, you know, that was part of slavery, has somehow like... been denied by a whole segment of America.
It never makes it its way down. You know, it there's a country song that I heard recently called If the South Had Won, right? And I was listening to it. It was so like, you know, pro-Southern and so deeply.
Really?
Yeah. And it was very, you know, it had a very, you know, upbeat kind of tempo to it. And there was no mention at all of any type of, you know, of the horrors or horrific realities of that government.
Yeah.
None, you know? And so, and this is partly the reason why I'm against actually removing statues, because I don't believe in sanitizing.
Oh, some people say that, you know, that what you ought to have is a statue that goes next to it, that goes, this is the story, right?
Yeah.
This is who died for this cause.
Yeah.
And this is what those deaths looked like.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, because I, you know, that's the thing. I don't think, I mean, history was never not meant to please people or to be nice. You know, history is meant to be contextualized and learned from, so that way we don't repeat it again.
That's a very good point, and it does grow and change, right? So it is a kind of organic structure.
And that's the thing. Art, on the other hand, once you make it, it is what it is, right? History can go on, but the art,
although how
still,
we interpret that artwork
is going to change,
it's the same thing, right?
But the image is still what it is,
right? But what people, the meaning that people get out of it, is going to morph.
It's going to morph
enormously,
And we have to accept that.
That was so interesting. That was so interesting, Richard.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that you had a chance to. And you know what? If I can find, right, I do have your email address. If I can find images from that Roth Horowitz exhibit.
Yeah,
I will send them to you because I saw your eyes. I can't say now that I could see your face. I could see your eyes, and it was more horrifying than what you can possibly imagine.
Yeah.
You know,
just the fact that it even exists.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would be very interested in some.
Yeah, I think you would. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This was so great.
Yeah,
thank you.
Always a good time.
Thank you. Thank you so much. All right. Great.